Today in the Grey Lodge, we're talking about Season 3, Twin Peaks The Return, Episode 3, or Part 3, Call for Help. And this episode is where it hit me that we're not strictly dealing with the child abuse, incestual plot lines of Season 1 and Season 2, although it does play a role, as we're going to talk about today. And today we're going to focus on the ideas of these sources of evil, and we're going to follow the path back to their home out in space. Major Briggs was monitoring deep space, so naturally there is a connection here. We're going to see the power of electricity manifesting life into reality, and it's one of the most important episodes in the entire Twin Peaks canon. We're going to go deep into the symbolism of some major occult topics. The number 253, the Mauve Zone. We're going to go deep into those. We're going to talk about the symbolism of shoes, Saturn, NATO, N-A-I-D-O, not N-A-T-O, King Arthur magic, 911 or 119, sex magic, Kabbalah, the dreamer who dreams, sycamores, jade, and we're going to lay the foundation for what this whole season is about. So you have to listen to this episode. It's very important. We're going to dig deep into the occult secrets of Kenneth Grant's books about the Mauve Zone, as well as his statements about the atomic bomb opening gateways in the mystery of the secret path. This is going to be one of the most important episodes about Twin Peaks, so pay attention, all right? Starts out, Cooper, still flying through space, and he enters this purple haze in a way, right? And there's like this ocean and a building floating in the middle of it, very strange, very surreal. He enters the building. There's an Asian woman with no eyes sitting by a fireplace. And once you get into the world of Twin Peaks, you find out her name is actually NATO, N-A-I-D-O. I'm probably mispronouncing it. And if you go to the Twin Peaks fandom wiki, it says that the term NATO in the language of Tambora means black. Could be a reference to the Black Lodge. In Japanese Buddhism, it means inner path, which I would argue that's probably the more appropriate title here because Cooper is going on a journey. All right. On a journey, inner path. Also note that fireplaces had a huge role in Season 1 and Season 2. In our wrap-up show for Season 2, we talked about the importance of the fire. Fire Walk With Me. Predominantly around Ben Horn's character, who was always battling these evil urges. I also wondered at some point if this character was actually Josie Packard, since she was... You know, she didn't specifically die. She was relegated to doorknob or nightstand knob status in Season 2. But apparently not, right? And it's hard to tell, right? It's been 25 years. This chick has no eyes. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. So anyway, Cooper, he asks where they are. And NATO, is it NATO or Nero? I got it spelled two different ways here. Hang on, folks. Why do I have it spelled two different ways? You may ask. Nero, Twin Peaks. Oh, it's NATO. Okay, I had it right. Okay, I misspelled it over here. So, NATO. Let me fix that. Okay, so, Cooper gets in there. He's like, where am I? You know, very Cooper-y. He's always confused as to where he's at. What year is it? He doesn't know. And NATO is... She starts feeling his face. And at first you think... The first time you watch this, you think, oh, well, she can't see... She's trying to see who it is. Kind of. That's kind of what that is. But you also saw, I think it was in episode 2 maybe, or maybe episode 1, Mr. C was feeling Jack's face. Okay? And he could see just fine. This, it's some form of recognition is my idea about what's going on. Identifying if someone is real. Identifying if someone is a doppelganger or not. Seems to be what this is about. And I think this is going to play a role in the final scenes of the season 3 here. We'll come back to it, all right? But NATO tells Cooper, you know, you got to be quiet. Someone's pounding on this door. This very ominous, scary pounding. And she leads him to a hatch. And they open the door. And he now goes outside of this cube. Out in space with this big... bell-looking thing with two gauges on it. All right. And this cube is floating in space. So it's like he fell through space, ended up in this purple area with the ocean and the building. And then he's now escaping the purple area of the building, and now he's back in space. And the whole thing was just a giant rectangular cube thing. And it made me think, could this be the cube we saw in New York City? Is the cube representative of Saturn? We saw Saturn in the red room on the table next to Cooper. Saturn, of course, the force of limitations and the construct of time and space, which, when you get into the world of Twin Peaks, those things aren't quite as fixed as one would believe. So she pulls a lever attached to the bell, and electricity zaps her, kicks her off. She falls into space. Is she dead? I have no idea. What the hell happened? Cooper, he's standing on top of the cube, and he sees Briggs, Major Briggs, his big face, floating in outer space, and he says, "Blue Rose." Now, recall that Briggs was communicating with Cooper in Season 2, Episode 13, with a shot of it floating out, floating in space, kind of. It's hard to explain. But Cooper, he ends up back inside the cube. Now he sees a woman at the fireplace with eyes, a different woman, and he notices her watch kicks over to 2:53, all right? So the time is 2:53, and things start going wonky. And if you recall in the last episode, the arm, or the evolution of the arm, I should say, told Cooper 2:53 time and time again. What's up with the 2:53? 2:53 is a trigger time for events ritualistically, kind of like the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn opening the gateway to the Red Room. Now, simultaneously, back on presumably Earth, Mr. C, Evil Cooper, he's driving his car. And we go back and forth between all these things happening, right? I'm trying to explain what the episode's about. And his car is kicking over to 2:53. And you start hearing the electricity crackling and humming. Something is happening here. Back in Whereverville, the woman tells Cooper, when you get there, you will already be there. And she's doing it in reverse speech, right? So it's noting that we are in the other realm. And what she means by that is there's a doppelganger of you, Cooper, where you're going. Where you're going, there's already you there. So he goes towards a door with the number 3. And the knocking, it gets louder. And she says, you better hurry, my mother's coming. And Cooper goes through the door, but his shoes get left behind. Now, what's interesting is that I heard on, there's several Twin Peaks podcasts. I listened to many episodes on the Diane podcast, which I actually kind of think I like the best. There's a couple good ones on there, but I like Diane. They were talking about the timelines here, and recall in the last episode, I talked about how Cooper manifested in the cube right before the experiment killed the couple drinking the coffee, having sexy time. So it's possible he somehow kept falling through space. And the knocking we hear is from Nato's mother, right? Well, Nato's mother could just be the experiment who is presently breaking through the cube in New York City. I know, it's confusing, right? But it was an interesting theory I heard on Diane. I didn't want to claim that one for myself, to be fair. But again, I mean, there's a million ways to decode Twin Peaks. So meanwhile, Mr. C, he's in his car. He's freaking out. The time's flipping over to 2:53. He looks down at his cigarette lighter. And the electricity from the cigarette lighter is ominous to him. He ends up wrecking the car, and sitting there, he sees red curtains starting to manifest in front of his car. And what the point of this whole beginning of the show, the process was supposed to get Evil Cooper, Mr. C, was supposed to go back to the Red Room, to the waiting room, to the Black Lodge, whatever you want to call it. And Good Cooper was supposed to leave the Red Room. But as we heard about in the last episode, the two can't be in the same world at one time. Evil Cooper's got to go back, a.k.a. Bob. Good Cooper can now enter the real world. I'm assuming they had to wait for these planetary alignments of Saturn to open the gateway at 253, is what I'm guessing, right? But you'll notice this area where all this weird mystical stuff happens for Cooper to actually head back to Earth occurred in that purple haze. Well, it's called the Mauv Zone. And you'll even find that specific term used by the Twin Peaks community. They call it the Mauv Zone. I think in a later episode, one of the characters calls it the Mauv Zone or something like that. Indicated not only by the color, but the processes that occur here. All right. To the uninitiated, they just think they're talking about a purple area. But we're going to dive deep into this concept because it's one of the most occult choices ever made by Mark Frost and David Lynch. All right. Strap in tight because this is going to be a minute. What is the Mauv Zone? Well, to understand this better, we need to explore the works of occult magician Kenneth Grant. But I've got some of Kenneth Grant's books. They're very difficult to read. They're very difficult to understand. All right. Now, some of you out there are way more in depth in the occult and magic, and maybe it makes all the sense in the world to you. I struggle. I am one of the uninitiated. I am a tourist in this region. So, to better understand Kenneth Grant, we can look to Peter Lavenda and his book, The Dark Lord, which breaks down a lot of these ideas in a more digestible manner that I find to be more fruitful. So here's the ideas that he presents. I will summate the ideas of the Mauv Zone. The idea is that there's power to be found in the dark side of humanity. It's where the prima materia can be found. That's the foundation of alchemy and rebuilding man into God. They describe it as the place where seeds are planted and dreams are born. There's the dream talk, right? It's considered the unconscious mind, and most are actually unaware of its presence, which manifest as dark impulses and desires. All right? Makes you think of Leland Palmer when, you know, Bob would be the unconscious mind, and he manifests as dark impulses and desires. Now, recall how Wyndham Earle in season 2 was trying to unlock all of this power from the Black Lodge. Power is found in the dark side of humanity. Same idea here. And maybe Cooper is traversing the dark side to tap into the same powers, which he plans on using for good. He wants to reincarnate. He will fulfill his Arthurian, we talked about King Arthur at the end of season 2. He will fulfill the King Arthur return to greatness. But the Mauv Zone is a place that's on the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And they say that it's the place where all magical power originates. And this is very important to the themes of Twin Peaks, because recall the poem about Fire Walk With Me, you know, the magician longs to see the magician. Recall we talked about the King Arthur comparisons with Cooper, because King Arthur's story followed the same pattern as Cooper. And remember, Wyndham Earle called him King Cooper when he abducted Queen Annie. The king is fatally wounded and the land stays barren. But in the spring, King Arthur is resurrected using magic and he fertilizes the land. And that's what the mythology of King Arthur is, him dying and everyone waiting for him to come back and save the day. That's Cooper. All right. So Cooper is headed to the Mauv Zone, the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, in order for magic to resurrect him. Now, Kenneth Grant started the Typhonian OTO, obviously a reference to Typhon, a.k.a. the Dark Lord, a.k.a. Set aka AWAS or Chaos. But anyways, Typhon represents the power wielder of the Mav Zone. And I was reading, I think it was, there's two Kenneth Grant books I'm trying to get through right now. And in one of them, he says that, look, Typhon isn't what you think it is. Typhon isn't necessarily this satanic set creature. It's something a bit different. I don't have that reference with me. I'll try to get it for later. It depends on how much you want to geek out on this stuff, you know. But Grant and magicians in general use sex magic energy to enter into the Mav Zone. And sex acts are used for magical purposes. Kenneth Grant believed that all religions have their origins in one single magical order from the stars. And where is Cooper? He's out in the stars. It's where he gets into the Mav Zone. They call this common origins or universalism. But the belief is that there's these recurring symbols you see globally of, you know, dragons and suns and swastikas and stuff. And what that means is it indicates an extraterrestrial force seeded us and started all religions. And we all kind of intuitively know out in the stars is where we belong. In the Buddhist cosmology, they believe in four cycles of time called the kalpas. Creation, evolution, dissolution, and the duration of dissolution. This is very similar to the Hindu yugas or Crowley's aeons, with the aeon of Mat wiping the aeon of Horus slate clean. You know, an aeon of Horus started when Rose Kelly told Crowley Horus was attempting contact with him. And from what I understand, we're in the aeon of Mat right now, I believe. I don't know. It's all so confusing. But in the Kabbalah text, Sefer HaTemuna, they talk about the idea of cycles and the world being built and destroyed over and over again. There's a book called Immortality, Resurrection, and the Age of the Universe, a Kabbalistic View by Rabbi Arya Kaplan. And the rabbi says that that book, the Sefer HaTemuna, is speaking about 7,000-year sabbatical cycles in each one of these worlds that gets created and destroyed. And there was also these worlds from previous cycles because God creates entire universes and destroys them. The theme to take away here is that there are cycles of time and ideas that God creates and destroys universes. And this is going to be more important later in the season. Now, Peter Levenda's book, The Dark Lord, talks about the cause for the destruction of the world is because of imbalances. And he talks about the tunnels of Set. I'm going to read you from the book. These tunnels are hidden pathways on the night side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, known to Kabbalists as the Sitra Ara, or other side, that he associates with the Klepoth, the shells of a previous creation that was destroyed due to imbalance resulting in shattered or broken Sephiroth, specifically the Sephiroth Gevurah, or Severity. These shards of an elder creation roam the cosmos as evil spirits or demonic forces. But to Grant, these are value judgments made by pious monotheists who ignore their true nature. What are we talking about? We're talking about evil spirits roaming the cosmos, which sounds very much like the Black Lodge or Bob. Now, Kenneth Grant advocated using tantric sex magic for a practitioner, a person, to unionize with supramundane entities, which just means supramundane just means spiritual or otherworldly, aka aliens. And Peter Levenda, even in The Dark Lord, he ties in all these ideas with H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu, which was summoned through rituals of sex magic in the swamps. Ew, right? Gross. Of all the places to do it. But the idea is that sex can be used to garner magical powers. That's what they're doing with sex magic. It also includes rape and pedophilia, which was quite literally the story behind Twin Peaks, right? Which could explain why Bob was, you know, raping his own child through Leland. I'm going to read to you from The Dark Lord. If we understand Set to represent raw sexuality, we can realize Set's place in the Egyptian cosmos. Set is power at its most primal and basic, uncivilized human level. Unrestrained, it results in rape and pedophilia, among other deprivations. Restrained, it can be a potent source of protection and occult power. So again, dark ideas hold magical power. And sex and magic will continue to come up in season 3. But Set, or Typhon, offers access to other dimensions, including the Mav Zone, the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And Lavenda talks about Lovecraft stories using ceremonial magic and shamanism to make contact with these forces. And these forces, they're doing it because they want to return to Earth. Now, why is that? Well, I would go back to the Book of Enoch and the idea of the Watchers, right? They couldn't resist the human women. They love it. I won't be vulgar, although I want to, but let's just say there's something about women that they love, and it's sexy time. So these entities want to return to Earth, but they're prevented from doing so because of spells that had closed the gate between this world and theirs. And they have to wait until the stars are just right for these rituals on Earth to happen to allow these gates to be opened. Those are the stories of Lovecraft. Now, this sounds very much like the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn to open the entrance for the Black Lodge entities to come into this world. Lavenda says, the right ceremony at the right time opens the gate between this world and the next. Right? At 2:53 is when this happens, according to Twin Peaks. Lovecraft's stories also suggest that mating with the gods can open the gates. Maybe this was Bob's plan, right? Maybe Bob mating with the gods. I'm sorry, Laura mating with the gods of, Bob, these entities, will facilitate the opening of the gates and letting all evil into this world. Furthermore, Kenneth Grant was into a thing called dream control, believing that it was our way of experiencing another dimension. He talks about it in a book called Outer Gateways, and he speaks of these extra dimensions of the dream world being in the Mav Zone. And the Mav Zone also is aka the Abyss, the belt of dark power encircling the Abyss, apparently. And we talked about the Abyss and Cooper's attempt to cross the Abyss at the end of season 2. Now, recall in the season 2 finale, it didn't work out well for Cooper. He wasn't ready. He failed the coffee test. He identified with the ego too much and couldn't make it through. So he's stuck, right? And if you read the introduction to Kenneth Grant's Beyond the Mav Zone, he explains that some people are better equipped to achieve the altered state of consciousness needed. He says the artist, the poet, the musician, the dreamer whose dreams are capable of realizing the truths of the great inane. We're going to talk about this later in the season. The dreamer whose dreams are capable of realizing the truths. I mean, this phrase almost exactly appears later on. The first illustration in Beyond the Mav Zone is the Dance of Kali, which was a theme we talked about in season 2, episode 20 with Wyndham Earle. Right? Remember that? He was talking about Kali. Then there's another reference. We're almost done here, folks. There's another reference in Kenneth Grant's book, Beyond the Mav Zone, to Twin Peaks. I'm going to read you from it. It says, in the present, objects appear to be real things, but objects also appear to be real to the dreamer when he is dreaming. Furthermore, our presence requires time and space for its appearance. For to be present, we must be extended in both these categories. But as there is no past or future, for we are conscious only of a seeming present, there is no present either. There is only now, and an awareness of ourselves which we experience as presence. But who or what is present? Right? All these things sort of coalesce. Is it future or is it past? And he says the correct answer is there is no past, there is no future. That's the correct answer, apparently. It's the question that Mike Gerard asked Cooper in the Red Room in season 3, episode 2. It's part of the test for Cooper to see if he understands. It's part of the coffee test, kind of, I think. But anyway, Grant talks about the magical powers of accessing the Mob Zone, and he says that, quote, the Earth is walled in, imprisoned, and conditioned by the power of Saturn. In order to make passage from Earth and into communication with these entities in the cosmos, we have to get past the limitations of Saturn. That's why Saturn is a theme we see in this story. One must be, he talks about how we have to behave differently so that our behavior becomes unacceptable and abnormal to ordinary society in order to do this. And look, it gets deep. He talks about how it allows one's fire snake to become available to vibrations from the outside, from these entities. And Grant says that Crowley and Blavatsky acted in this way, as well as others who lived their dream in addition to describing it. And he talks about the idea of Typhon, and what he's doing is actually, what Kenneth Grant is doing is actually using more ideas of Tantra and female secretions to create elixirs. These are the secrets of the mysteries, going back to Tantra. It's a form of psychosexual alchemy. Wild stuff. But again, like, if you want to look at the basics of it, you want to zoom out, the idea is that we're basically looking to gain magical powers from another dimension, making contact with entities through sex magic, even, right? Now, Lavenda, we're almost done. Last bit. Lavenda also talks about surrealism being important to the study of magic and the world of the esoteric, because it used psychology, automatic writing, the tarot, and all these occult practices to create art as a way to initiate the viewer. It's supposed to shock the audience into viewing the world in a different way. That's what Alice in Wonderland was about, changing the perspective of the viewer of the world. One of my initiatory stories was Alice in Wonderland. I was obsessed with it as a kid. I didn't understand why. If done correctly, it can create a dreamlike state for the viewer to watch these surreal works of art. He said, it's like an urgent message was being received from Grant's Mob Zone. Now, to sum it up and to, you know, finish this Mob Zone talk, the Mob Zone is the space between being awake and deep dreamless sleep. All right, so anytime we're talking about dreams, we're talking about accessing the Mob Zone. The location of the Mob Zone is the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, and going to it promises magical powers. And the reason you would want to do, the reason Cooper would want to do that is to resurrect King Arthur, which is Cooper, to save the day. Now, back to the story. Now we're in Las Vegas, and there's a man named Dougie. We're introduced to Dougie, and of course, it's Kyle MacLachlan, and you're like, is this Cooper with a toupee? What am I looking at here? What is this? So now there's three Coopers. There's Mr. C. There's Good Cooper trapped in the Mob Zone. And now there's Dougie. And Dougie's with a prostitute named Jade. All right. Now recall, we said that Jade was the color of that ring that we saw throughout all the show. The ring that was a death curse, right? So it's interesting that her name is Jade. And we talked about this already, how Jade was the color of the jewels used by the Aztecs for the sacrifice of children to release their energy to the gods. Again, same gods. These entities from the cosmos. Bob, the Black Lodge, the Experiment, all these things. And we hear that Dougie's left arm is tingly and numb. Again, there's so many references to season one and two. If you've seen Twin Peaks a bunch, you catch them all. If it's your first time through, you won't catch too many of them. So I'm going to point out what I catch here. But his left arm goes tingly and numb. This is a reference to the characters season two when the gateway opened up for the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter, right? He knew that Dougie is sensing a shift coming up. And we zoom in and Dougie, who's hanging out with a prostitute named Jade, is wearing the Jade ring. All right. Not a good sign, but look, the ring is back, folks. But Dougie's struggling. He's crawling on the floor. And now we're flashing back to Mr. C. And we see the red curtains show up in both worlds here. Dougie and Mr. C. Dougie is having a hard time for whatever reason. He starts vomiting. And the next thing you know, he's in the red room and he's sitting on a chair. Which makes sense because he's wearing the jade ring. And we knew, like, when you're wearing that jade ring, you end up in the red room. Mr. C, who's still struggling in his car, sees the curtains. And now he sees Dougie in the red room on the chair. And Mr. C starts puking. And he's puking up yellow and black corn. Looks like creamed corn, right? Was it Garmin Bogia? Yeah, of course it's Garmin Bogia. And it's almost like he's being pulled into the red room. Which, as we heard in episodes 1 and 2, that was the plan, was they want to swap out Coopers. But he doesn't quite cross over. But Dougie's in there. Dougie's in the red room. He sees one-armed man Mike, and he says, "I feel funny," and asks him, "What's happening here?" And Mike said, "Someone manufactured you for a purpose, but I think now that's been fulfilled." This is very important to the whole storyline of season 3. And this tells me that Mike and the White Lodge characters, they know what's going on. Just like there was a playbook with Laura and the arm and Mike telling Cooper how he had to leave. They want Cooper to leave and they want Mr. C to come back in. And somehow Dougie got mixed into this and we find out Dougie was manufactured. Now, Dougie's still wearing the ring, but he's missing his shoes, which is also like Cooper when he leaves the mob zone, his shoes stay behind. So Dougie starts shrinking out of existence. His head disappears, and a gold orb comes out of it. All right? And Dougie's gone. All he leaves behind is this gold orb and the jade ring. One-armed man Mike picks him up, places the ring back on that altar table. And the takeaway here was that Dougie was manufactured, and now we're back down to two Coopers, the good Cooper and Mr. C. I should also note that the gold orb it represents spirits in Twin Peaks. And this goes back to Wizard of Oz. David Lynch was obsessed with Wizard of Oz. Said he thinks about it every single day. And when you watch Wizard of Oz, the good witch shows up in the form of an orb, which when you get into ghost hunting, you find these orbs all the time. So Cooper's out in the mob zone, out in space. He goes through this, mother's banging on the door, and the woman's like, "You got to go." He squeezes through this sort of giant electrical socket, his shoes drop, and now he manifests through the electrical socket into Las Vegas, into the room where Dougie just trade places with him, basically. Where Dougie had vomited. So we've now replaced the manufactured Dougie with good Cooper. And thank goodness, right? Oh, finally made it. Episode 3, Cooper's back. You know? Time for Cooper to save the day again. Drinking coffee, eating cherry pie. Can't wait. Surely nothing will go wrong here, right? But there's something wrong with Cooper, or Dougie, I should say. We're gonna call him Dougie. And Jade's like, "What's wrong with you, Dougie?" And he's not really saying nothing. She's like, "I'm gonna give you a ride back to the casino, back to the Silver Mustang Casino." But Dougie Cooper here is just like a total numbnuts. He has no idea what's going on. He's like, he can't talk. It's like he can't even think. And she finds in his pocket, he's got a key to room 315. The key to the Great Northern. That's right, from season 1 and 2. He's still got the key in his pocket. 25 years later. Now, this is interesting because in the mob zone, where Cooper just came from, if you watch, there was actually 2 exit doors. He went through door number 3, but there was also a door number 15. So you've got 315. See how everything's connected in this dream world and the real world? I gotta make a note here. I'm gonna put the photo on the Instagram. I got lots of images from this one. This is gonna be this might be 2 posts of images. But there's this whole thing where Cooper, Dougie, I should say, who's now Dougie, and fake Dougie, manufactured Dougie, who went to the Red Room, they're both missing their shoes. What's up with the shoes? Well, shoes does have a weird legacy in Twin Peaks worth taking a look at. Audrey replaces her shoes in the pilot, if you recall, for reasons we don't really know. She has the white and black shoes when she leaves home. She gets to school. She swaps out for the red shoes. Maybe it was like she was trying to be a good girl at home and a naughty girl at school. I don't know. One-armed Mike Gerard, he's a shoe salesman. Season 2, Episode 8, Bobby listens to the tape that was hidden in Leo's boots, the circle boot, right? And remember Leo in the wheelchair kept saying new shoes when he was in the wheelchair. And then someone on Reddit, I was looking into this, someone on Reddit found a scene later in the season where Mr. C, he starts messing with some electronics and a surveillance monitor shows a shoe repair shop. What's the deal with the shoes? I've read that shoes symbolize being dirty or unholy, since shoes are always touching the ground. That's why in Japanese culture, they remove their shoes when they go in the house, which I do here in my house, too. In general, I'm not psychotic about it, but yeah, I mean, shoes, it is kind of gross. You're walking around, people are spitting, whatever's out there. And in Arabic cultures, it's an insult to show someone the sole of your shoe or wash it, you throw it at them like they threw them at George Bush. But I've also read that shoes can symbolize femininity or being sexy. So, I mean, pick which one you like. But there's lots of shoe themes in Twin Peaks. Maybe by the end of this, we'll figure it out. Jade, she gives Dougie a ride to the casino. And while they're driving, Dougie, who's still sort of like out there, out to lunch, he takes note to the street sign. Stares right at it. Says Sycamore Street. And so it's almost like he seems to recollect something. Like things trigger Dougie into having memories of something going on. And there's many signs throughout Twin Peaks Season 3, Twin Peaks The Return. The Return of King Arthur. The signs and synchronicities in this universe. Referring back to season 1 and season 2, reminding Dougie of who he is, of how he is Cooper. I'll list some of the ones I'm seeing, but I'm sure there's a ons more that I missed. That's what's fun about Twin Peaks. You can keep watching it over and over again. Because sycamores were the 12 trees at the entrance to the Black Lodge at Glastonbury Grove, right? We talked about the 12 Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur, and so on. But here's a reference to sycamore. I should also know there's snipers trying to take Dougie out. We're not sure why yet. They put explosives on his car that's still parked at this house in Las Vegas. And across the street, there's a woman on drugs, and she's yelling 119 while her son is just watching her do drugs and eat saltines. Let me tell you something. If you go on a diet long enough, saltines taste phenomenal. All right, that's how you know you've been eating real clean. If you eat a saltine and you're like, damn, that's good. Tastes real good. Now let's talk about 911. She's obviously using reverse speech, 119. So let's get that out of the way. Something is wrong. Something is inverted here. There's a lot of intuition going on. Like Dougie, when he's getting a ride with Jade, drops his keys in the Jeep and he bends over to pick them up right when the assassins are looking in the car to see if they should shoot him. But 911 is heavily occult. We did several episodes on the symbolism of 9/11 in 2021, I think. But I got something new for you here. I told you I was reading Kenneth Grant, his book Outside the Circles of Time. He says, the numbers 9 and 11 represent the lion serpent invoked by the hand. The 9th and 11th degrees of OTO thus contain the mystery of the secret path. Perfection is expressed by the magical mode of this path. But the addition of the Kala of the goddess, i.e. K, alters somewhat the sense in which Crowley expressed it. Let's unpack what he's saying here. And that's why it takes so long to read Kenneth Grant. It's just like chocked full of symbolism and ideas. When he says the addition of the Kala of the goddess, i.e. K, what he's talking about is turning magic into magic with a K. That's why Crowley said that K is a magical number. He adds the 11, the 11th letter K. Is that right? Yeah, the 11th letter is K to magic, to differentiate it from stage magic. Because Crowley knew the secrets and the mysteries of the tantras, and the tantric sex magic was all about about using kalas, which is the excretions from the female goddess in sex magic. Sex magical powers. And earlier in the book, Kenneth Grant talks about secrets, how it appears multiple times in the Book of the Law. And it's a play on the hidden mysteries of secretions. Secret ion is how you spell secretion. And he says that the new secret magical age is the aeon without a word, aka the aeon of silence, or the AIN. And what's the deal with Dougie? He's virtually silent. Okay. And the AIN, I don't know how you pronounce it, AIN, is the perfect ion, perfection. And what's perfection? The number 10, the number of completion, which is 253. 2 plus 5 plus 3 equals 10 in Twin Peaks. So that is the reason with 253. Again, very important. A guy named Frater Akkad saw that this perfect ion of Aeon was the amalgam of Horus and Set, and it is called the Aeon of the Wordless Beast, whose type is the Wand of Double Power. Nine, and it uses Roman numerals. 9 plus 11 equals 20. XX is 20, which in the tarot represents the Aeon. So 9 plus 11 equals 20, which is 10 twice, the number of perfection for the perfect ion. So why is this woman screaming 119? Well, it's the mystery of the secret path. And I think the idea is that Cooper is on the path, all right? I guess that's kind of the, and he's, you know, the aeon without a word, Dougie is silent, right? Lots of strange things there, but that's more occult symbolism of 911. So, let's wrap up Mr. C. He ends up not crossing over. He's unconscious in his vehicle. A highway patrolman picks him up. Now, back to Twin Peaks. We're at the Sheriff's Department. Hawk, Andy, and Lucy, they're looking through the Cooper and Laura files, all right? But they can't figure out what's missing because the log lady was like, telling him, you got to find this thing. Lucy thinks the missing thing from the evidence box was a chocolate bunny that she had eaten. And listen to the dialogue here.
I can get you more bunnies. It's not about the bunny. Is it about the bunny? No. It's not about the bunny.
Hawk says it's not about the bunny. They says, is it about the bunny? This was a reference we heard earlier in this show, on Fire Walk With Me. Remember when Laura's like, you killed Mike. And Bobby's like, I didn't kill Mike. That's not Mike. Is it Mike? You hear this a couple times in Twin Peaks, and here it is again. And maybe I'm being eccentric, but I want you to look at the image I will present on the Instagram. You will see two boxes of evidence on the table, each with an X on them. So it forms an XX, just like Kenneth Grant's idea of 9 plus 11 equal XX, the perfect ion. Call me crazy. Dr. Jacoby's still being weird. He's got this insane contraption to paint shovels gold that Lynch shows us for about 10 minutes. Right? Could this be a reference to alchemy of turning lead into gold? I don't know. Meanwhile, Jade, she drops Dougie off at the Silver Mustang Casino. And he, at least now he's talking, but all he can do is repeat words that people say to him. And Jade tells him, you need to call for help. So he just, all he can say is, call for help. You know? I'm going to play a clip because it's real interesting when she drops him off. Take a listen.
Call for help.
Call for help.
Right. And I think you should maybe call a doctor or something, because I think you might have had a little stroke or something.
Something.
Yes. You can go out now.
You can go out now.
Dougie, go. Come on, let's get you out of here. Come on, let's go, Dougie. Right, right.
She tells Cooper, or Dougie, you can go out now. And then Dougie flashes back to Laura in the lodge saying, you can go out now. All these memories are triggering. All right. And you'll notice this idea throughout season three of Dougie not knowing how to get out of the car. And I think this is a reference to Dougie not knowing how to get out of the red room. So anyways, Dougie walks into the casino. And on the floor, we see the logo for the Silver Mustang. And what is it? It's two die. A pair of dice, if you will. And if you are crazy like me, you'll count those dice and you'll see that it shows us 2, 5, and 3. This is very important. This tells me that this world that Dougie Cooper is in is being fed synchronicities from the lodge. The lodge folks are manipulating this reality in all these ways to try to wake Cooper up within Dougie's body, to try to remind him, to snap him out of the dream. Why else would the Silver Mustang logo have 253 on it as well? And not to mention, it's the Silver Mustang, which is a reference to the white horse. This is the visions of Sarah and Laura Palmer. We saw it in season 3, episode 1 recently. Or was it episode 2? I think it was episode 1. But Dougie, he's in there and he's watching this guy play slots. This guy, he hits some little jackpot and he says, hello. So Cooper, another classic Twin Peaks reference here. Cooper tries his hand at different slot machines by following this image of the red room with a flame, which seems to direct him to certain machines that he can hit the jackpots on. Take a listen.
Hello?
You broke that one. You broke it real good. Broke it. Sure did, pal.
Yeah, he sees an entrance to the red room, the waiting room, with a flame above certain slot machines, and he plays a bunch of them. He keeps hitting mega jackpots, keeps saying hello every time. And the first time you watch this, if you're like me, you're like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever seen. Why am I watching this? But the more you watch it, the more you love it. It's hard to explain. But an old homeless woman, she's playing the slots, and she wants in on that action. And Dougie tells her where to go, and she starts hitting jackpots too. But again, the idea is that the lodge folks are manipulating the reality. They're showing Dougie which slot machines to play. All right. Finally, we head to Philly. FBI Gordon Cole. Oh, my God. And Albert. And a new character, Tammy Preston. That's TP from the Secret History of Twin Peaks book that we reviewed not too long ago. And they're reviewing a new case. They're looking at the glass box murders of Sam and Tracy. We finally get some names for these two. The coffee sex magic people. Or coffee sexy time people, excuse me. And they had caught an image on the cameras. Inside, they were pointed in the glass box of this entity of the experiment, right? And then Gordon Cole gets a phone call from none other than Dale Cooper. What in the heck is going on? Now, notice in Cole's office, he's got a giant poster of the atomic bomb right behind his desk. But Cole ends up getting a call about going to South Dakota, and Albert, of course, is thrilled about going to South Dakota. So they're going to go catch a flight down there. And then finally, we're at the Roadhouse for the performance of the episode. It's the Cactus Blossoms performing Mississippi. And the lyrics include, "My angel sings down to me. She's somewhere on the shore waiting for me with her wet hair and sandy gown, singing songs, waves of sound." Sounds a lot like Laura Palmer to me. It's almost like saying, hey, don't forget why we're here. It's about Laura Palmer. Her murder triggered a whole thing. Even though we're throwing all these other things, we're throwing Mr. Jackpots and crazy stuff, don't forget, keep your eye on the prize here, and that's Laura Palmer. So, the next episode for your homework, watch Bring Back Some Memories, and we're going to revisit Mr. Jackpots. We're going to meet some new characters, of course. There's 1,000 new characters. And it's gonna be good. And things are going to heat up here. If you have doubts in the show, I need you to, at the very bare minimum, stick around to episode 8. That's when things are going to really start heating up. Thanks for listening to the show. Hope you're enjoying the Grey Lodge. Till next time, stay positive.